bullshit interpretation skill overloaded and crashed. So he took a deep breath, preparing for assault. Tatum decided that as funny as it would be to see her verbally disintegrate the lieutenant, they could at least justify the trip to Texas.
Who is the detective handling the case?
He asked hurriedly.
He's our most experienced investigator, so I assure you we're taking this case very seriously.
Tatum resisted the impulse to point out that it hadn't gone on the very serious whiteboard.
Of course. Can you point us to his cubicle? We'll just talk to him, see we're on the same page, and be on our way.
Jensen's face relaxed, and a small smile twisted his thick lips. Clearly the words, "be on our way," were what he'd wanted to hear all along. Chapter 9. Detective Samuel Foster had rich black skin, his face sporting a full dark beard with spotty touches of gray. Zoe estimated he was about 40, perhaps slightly older, the lines of age starting to materialize on his forehead. Someone had once told her cops aged faster, and though it was a ridiculous generalization, she often saw instances in which it really was true. He chewed a pencil, half gazing at his monitor when they showed up in his cubicle, led by Lieutenant Jensen. The screen displayed the video page of the live burial of Nicole Medina, the frame frozen halfway through the video.
Detective, these are Agents Gray and Bentley from the FBI.
Jensen's voice was businesslike, but Zoe could sense a vague snappishness in it, as if this whole situation had offended him in some obscure manner. She didn't bother correcting him about her actual title. Foster swiveled his chair to look at them. His face was impassive and calculating. He took the pencil from his mouth. Teeth marks marred the pencil's entire surface.
FBI agents, Foster said. Why are they here? They came after we informed them about the Nicole Medina case.
We did?
Foster's eyes widened.
I'm glad you changed your mind, Lieutenant. They're just here to offer some advice.
Jensen's jaw was clenched so tightly that it was a wonder he managed to form syllables.
I would appreciate it if you would give them a rundown of what we have so far. Absolutely, Lieutenant.
Jensen nodded curtly and left without saying another word. The detective's face broke into a wide, warm smile. A second before, he had been a jaded, angry cop. Now he metamorphosed into a pleasant, friendly, welcoming man.
Thanks for coming. I'm frankly relieved the FBI is showing such an interest in our case. Are you the one who notified the FBI about it?
Tatum asked.
Me?
Foster put his hand on his chest theatrically.
That's not my decision to make. I suggested we call the feds, but ultimately, only the lieutenant decides if the case warrants outside intervention.
Well, it's good that someone notified us, Zoe said, impatient to start. I hope we'll be able to help narrow the suspect list. Foster motioned at an extra chair beside him.
Sit down. You can grab a third chair from the cubicle over there. O'Sullivan is on vacation. He won't mind.
Zoe sat down while Tatum went to the adjacent cubicle to get the extra chair. It was crowded in the cubicle, which hardly had enough room for two people, not to mention three.
I assume you saw the video?
Foster placed the pencil he'd chewed in a small cup, already containing half a dozen mangled pencils.
Yes, Zoe said. Lieutenant Jensen told us that you think Nicole Medina was being used to threaten her father in some capacity.
I'm sure the lieutenant has some wild theories, but I assure you he didn't get them from me,
Foster said. Zoe exchanged looks with Tatum.
The lieutenant said he has an informant who told him that. Rufus, Blackie Anderson. Blackie always has a tip for us, especially since we started paying $40 per tip. Some of his tips pan out, and some make great bedtime stories.
Foster shook his head.
I don't believe for a second this is drug or gang-related. There's a sick bastard behind all this. What can you tell us about Nicole Medina's disappearance?
Tatum asked.
Her mother reported her missing on the morning of September 2nd,
Foster answered.
Nicole had gone to a party the night before. Told her mother she'd be home by midnight. In the morning, when her mother saw she never came back home, she called us. We talked to her friends, and they claimed she rode with them and that they dropped her at home. Their accounts match, and we have red light camera footage of the four of them in the car. Nicole's face is visible in the back seat.
How does she seem in the footage? Zoe asked. Drunk, sleepy.
You tell me.
Foster leaned forward and grabbed the mouse. He double-clicked an image file on an open folder. The image opened on screen, displaying an image of a Toyota driving down the road. The image's resolution was poor, but Zoe could spot the hazy face of a girl staring out the passenger window. It was impossible to see her features clearly.
"She's conscious. That much we can tell," Foster said. "Nothing much beyond that. I can show you the actual footage from the red light cam later." "What then?"
Tatum asked.
"According to her friends, they dropped her off at her home and drove away. I went to her home with the driver, and he showed me exactly where he stopped the car. We went door to door in the vicinity. No one saw them dropping her off, but like I said, their accounts match, and they look like nice kids. The street is dark, and there's a gravel path to the door."
Zoe frowned. "You think someone grabbed it there?"
"There are some scuff marks on the path that could indicate a struggle."
Foster shrugged.
"Not conclusive. No blood found on the scene. In fact, the mother couldn't tell us for sure that Nicole didn't return home. It's possible Nicole came home, went to sleep, and left in the morning before her mother woke up. But it isn't likely. We couldn't find anything that would indicate Nicole came home after the party."
Zoe tried to imagine it. Nicole being dragged off a few steps from the entrance to her home. It sounded remarkably risky, but she could see the advantages. The girl would be less alert, already feeling safe. Zoe resolved to see the house for herself. Foster sighed.
"The lieutenant has some wild theories, but to his credit, he took it seriously, as did the chief. We talked to everyone, did an extensive search in the vicinity, and then in the evening, a local kid named Ronnie Cronin sent us the link to this video."
He gestured at the monitor, his face weary.
"I watched this thing several times. It keeps me awake at night."
Zoe could sympathize. Even with the image frozen, the frame blurry, caught in the midst of motion, it was unpleasant. The wide, panicky gaze, the gaping mouth, paused mid-scream, the claustrophobic space the young woman was in. "This local kid," she said. "How did he find the link to the video?"
"Got it by email. He has a YouTube channel where he talks about..."
Foster rolled his eyes.
"I have no idea about what, frankly. I've watched several of his videos and I couldn't understand half of what he was talking about. Anyway, he said someone sent this to him and a bunch of other people. He forwarded the email to me. The email is from a temporary mail address and just has the video link. It was sent to 10 different email addresses. 8 of them, including Cronin, are popular YouTubers from San Angelo and nearby towns. The other 2 are local reporters. I talked to a few of them, and they all said more or less the same. They watched a few seconds, decided the video was a distasteful prank, and stopped watching."
"Did you check Cronin?" Zoe asked.
"He was doing an all-night live broadcast of himself playing a video game with a bunch of friends. We checked it out, and it's rock solid." "Any other leads?"
Tatum asked.
"The mother gave us a handful of contacts, mostly friends of Medina. Then I went to the prison and talked to her father. He seemed very worried and told me there was no way this was gang-related. We had a lot of ground to cover and time was ticking."
Foster adopted the glazed look of a man looking back into the past, regretting his decisions.
"I should have insisted right then that we involve you people. But I thought we'd uncover something fast. Then someone talked to Blackie. And since then, well, we're still looking. But the case is going in the wrong directions. And now if the girl is left buried, there's a good chance she's dead."
"You want us to find her," Zoe said, the realization sinking. "That's why you involved the Bureau in the first place."
"Of course. You guys have ways to trace the video, right? Find out who posted it? Our cyber unit got nowhere with it, but the feds should be able to do it easily."
Zoe gritted her teeth in frustration. She didn't have Foster's faith in their cyber capabilities. But even worse, Foster's call for help had gotten to the wrong place. All the detective needed was someone from the FBI field office in San Antonio to take a look. Instead, his request had somehow been routed to the BAU, wasting valuable time, ending up with the wrong people showing up. Had anyone in the Bureau even made a serious attempt to locate the video's source? Foster's eyes shifted between them.
"So, can you talk to your analysts? Do some FBI magic?"
Zoe shook her head.
That's not what we...
We'll do whatever we can,
Tatum said.
Chapter 10. As far as Tatum was concerned, the entire bureau had only one tech analyst, Sara Lee from the LA field office. He was vaguely aware of other people sporting the title analyst walking around, and it made certain sense. After all, Sara couldn't do everything, and people had to be hired to pick up her slack. But if he needed anything at all, he called Sara. If he had a question about explosives, he called Sara. Tricky tool marks in a crime scene. Sara was the first one he dialed. Couldn't figure out how to fix his internet router at home after Marvin broke it. A quick phone call to Sara. Sitting in the empty cubicle across from Foster's, he dialed her private number, not bothering to go through her office number. Tatum. She sounded half delighted, half aghast to answer his phone call.
Sara.
He grinned at the sound of her voice.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's nice to talk to you. How are things in the BAU?
Still learning the ropes,
Tatum said, dutifully taking part in the small talk ceremony.
How's Grace?
Grace was Sarah's dog, and Tatum had been regaled with stories about her more times than he could count.
She's good. She ate cat poop yesterday.
Awesome. Listen, Sara, I need a favor.
Tatum, you can't keep calling me for favors.
It's a real emergency.
Don't they have people in Quantico to help you?
They're all idiots. And whenever I ask one to help me, they want me to fill out paperwork.
Be still, my beating heart, she remarked dryly. Paperwork? What is the bureau coming to?
Form 212B this, Form 42A that.
Those are not real form numbers. Did you ever fill out any lab form?
I don't need to, because you are above all that.
I'm not above it. You just can't seem to do it.
It's like I'm James Bond and you are Q, full of technological wonders.
I bet even James Bond filled out some request forms every now and then.
You are like an oracle who has all the answers.
Okay, okay, stop that. What do you need? He filled her in on the details, simultaneously emailing her the video link from his laptop. He heard her typing on her keyboard, and after a minute, he heard the faint screaming of Nicole Medina coming from her side of the phone. Sarah's breath hitched. What do you need from me? She asked. The screaming stopped as she either muted or paused the video.
I need to trace that video.
I can do some digging, but it'll take time, and I'm not very optimistic. There was some furious typing going on. I'll also try and figure out who the domain name belongs to. Maybe I can find it through there. Tatum drummed on the desk.
Is there any other way you can get the location of the video? Maybe use aerial photos to search for it?
Sara snorted. And look for what? Cacti, pebbles, and sand somewhere in Texas? I doubt that would narrow it down.
Then maybe you could...
Maybe you could let me do my job in peace. You're just as irritating as you were when you were working here, hovering over my shoulder with your endless suggestions. There was some tapping in the background as he waited on the line. I just skipped ahead a bit, Sara said. What's his deal with the president?
This isn't about the president. He's just using the live feed of CNN, too.
The CNN feed is live?
Yeah.
I'll call you once I have something, okay? She sounded suddenly excited.
Thanks, Sara. I really appreciate it. You're my...
I'm your oracle, your Q, your technical wizard, I know. I'll call you. She hung up. Amused, he turned to Foster and Zoe, who were sitting in Foster's cubicle going over the case's timeline again. I want to talk to Nicole Medina's mother, Zoe told him. And I want to see the place where she supposedly disappeared.
Chapter 11. Tatum followed Foster's car, a battered silver Chevy, to Nicole Medina's home. Foster had offered to give them a ride, but Tatum preferred to drive and get a bit of a feel for San Angelo on the way. The ride would have been relaxing as well if it hadn't been Zoe's turn to choose the music. She inflicted Taylor Swift's Red upon him and pointed out that she was skipping some of the songs because she wanted him to hear the best ones. As far as he was concerned, this didn't improve the experience. Finally, Foster's car parked on the side of the street. Tatum slowed down, pulling to the side behind him. The road's edges met with grass and dirt, no sidewalk anywhere. There was a large cluster of wild bushes and foliage to their right, and beyond it, a gravel road. He switched off the engine and stepped out of the car. Foster waited for them with his hands on his hips, his eyes hidden by a pair of dark shades. He indicated down the gravel path.
That's the house.
Tatum looked down the road. The house was small but seemed well-maintained. The grass in the front yard was mowed, and clusters of flowers grew around it. The sprinklers were running, painting the air in a misty hue. He thought of Sophia Medina, Nicole's mother, worried sick about her daughter. No street lights, Zoe said by his side.
And the house is about 15 yards from the road, Tatum pointed out. No immediate neighbors.
He could hide here easily. Zoe pointed at the foliage and then gestured back the way they had come. With his vehicle over there, just a few yards down the road, there's a spot no one would notice.
Her cheeks and forehead were turning pink, but she didn't seem to notice the sun at all. Was she even aware the sun was up? Or did she see the street as it was, late in the evening, 4 days ago, when Nicole Medina had been taken? She took a few steps to the thick foliage, crouched between the low trees and bushes. Tatum eyed her position. She was right. If the kidnapper had hidden there, he would have been practically invisible in the dark. The door to Nicole Medina's home opened abruptly, and a woman half marched, half ran to them, her entire body rigid with tension.
Detective, she said. Any news about Nicole?
No, Mrs. Medina. I'm sorry.
Foster answered gently. The woman's body slumped, and she turned to look at Tatum.
This is Agent Gray, Foster gestured. From the FBI. He's here to help us investigate your daughter's case.
Tatum was used to seeing a spectrum of emotions on people's faces when realizing that a Fed had entered their life. But the only reaction he saw from Sophia Medina was a slight measure of relief.
Thank you, she said. She's been missing for 4 days.
I understand, Tatum said. The detective.
She went with her friends to a party. They dropped her off here.
Her words rushed out of her mouth, frantic, urgent.
They're nice kids. I know them all. Gina practically grew up in our house. She's Nicole's best friend, and they dropped Nicole here. She was right here, but I don't think she entered the house. She didn't use her toothbrush, and her clothes weren't in the laundry. She always changes her clothes. Always brushes her teeth before going to bed. I can give you the phone numbers of all her friends and her teachers. Her teachers all love her. They can tell you.
Tatum raised his palms in a reassuring gesture, and the torrent of words died. The woman stared at him pleadingly. A rustle came from the bushes, and Sophia's eyes shifted as Zoe stepped out from them.
This is my partner, Zoe Bentley.
He intentionally neglected to add Zoe's title. He really didn't want to explain to Sophia why a forensic psychologist was investigating Nicole's case.
Mind if we come in?
Foster asked. Sophia nodded and let them inside, past the cool haze of mist from the sprinklers. The house was dark, most of the blinds shut, the lights turned off. Only one of the windows was open, facing the street, a single chair by it. An ashtray and several empty mugs of coffee were scattered on the floor next to the chair. This was Sophia's sentry post. She probably sat there, waiting for the police to show up, and maybe hoping that Nicole would stroll down the gravel path and come back home. Could you take us to your daughter's room, please? Zoe's voice was subdued. The silent, dark house felt like a place of mourning. Loud voices did not belong.
Her room's over here.
The woman led them to a small room. The walls were painted a soft yellow, and the bed sheets had a cheerful floral pattern. A smooth wooden desk stood by a small window, and on it were a few notebooks, a small desk lamp, a scented candle. Did you tidy the room after your daughter disappeared? Zoe asked.
No, Sophia said. Nicole likes it organized.
Tatum walked over to the far wall, where a small shelf hung, covered with figurines of turtles. They were different sizes and shapes, made of wood, glass, plastic, cloth. He picked one up, a handmade clay turtle.
It's Nicole's collection, Sophia explained. She started collecting them when she was 12.
Does Nicole have a boyfriend? Zoe asked.
No, she broke up with her boyfriend 6 months ago, Sophia answered.
Who was he?
A boy from school.
We talked to him, Foster said. He hadn't seen Nicole in a while.
Zoe glanced at Foster, raising her eyebrow doubtfully.
And no other boys? No one she dated? Not even once?
No, she would have told me,
the mother answered.
Any new people in her life?
She always had a lot of friends, but I don't think there is anyone new. She spends all day messaging them on the phone. It keeps pinging, driving me insane.
Her voice broke. Tatum was willing to bet the absence of the phone's pinging had just occurred to her. Is she popular? Zoe asked.
She is. She's very friendly and sweet. She has a knack for making friends.
Zoe grilled her about Nicole's habits, what she did during the day, whom she interacted with, whether she often returned home late at night. Tatum wandered around, examining the room, half listening to the woman's answers. The missing girl's presence was everywhere. Pictures of Nicole on top of a dresser, a hairbrush with a bunch of hairbands wrapped around its handle discarded on a shelf, a pair of pink flip-flops in one of the corners. After a while, Zoe stopped asking questions and just listened as Sophia told her stories about Nicole. How Nicole loved swimming, how she'd been afraid of monsters under the bed until she was six, the time Nicole had bought her a birthday present with all of her allowance. Finally, she seemed to run out of steam. Tears were running down her cheeks, her words submerged in fear and worry. Foster thanked her and they stepped outside, closing the door behind them.
Where did you spot the scuff marks?
Zoe asked. Foster stepped to the edge of the path.
Over here,
he crouched.
It's hard to see now, but we have a few photographs.
Tatum's phone rang. He checked the display. It was Sara Lee. He stepped aside, letting Foster talk to Zoe and answered the call.
You found something?
That CNN video was live, right? So we know when the video was taken.
That's right.
Tatum watched Foster and Zoe as they straightened. Foster pointed at the street, saying something.
I contacted the mobile providers covering the area, Sara told him, and asked for CDRs of users who browsed to the CNN live feed page around that time.
Tatum digested this. It took him a few seconds to remember what CDR stood for. Call detail records. When the man had browsed to CNN, the mobile company maintained a record of the activity, which had to include the domain name as well as the cell base stations that serviced the request, and that could be translated to an approximate location. Fortunately for them, this information was not protected by the Fourth Amendment and could be accessed by Sara without a warrant.
That list must be huge.
It was. Sara had an undertone of smugness to her voice.
So I narrowed it down. Just the perimeter around San Angelo. Got the exact time of that specific video on CNN, and limited myself to CDRs of users who started watching the live stream within 5 minutes of that time. The list became quite short.
How short?
He asked, his voice tense. 18 phone numbers in San Angelo or the vicinity. And out of those 18, 17 were deep in San Angelo. So they obviously aren't our guy, right? Our guy was in the middle of nowhere.
Sara.
Tatum felt his heart pound.
You have a location for me?
I'm sending you the GPS coordinates, and I already checked satellite images, Tatum. The location's accuracy isn't great, but the surroundings are a perfect match for the video. Chapter 12. Zoe looked at the gravel path and its surroundings, trying to picture that night. It would have been almost pitch black without streetlights. The car with Nicole's friends had dropped her off. She'd waved goodbye and they'd driven away, leaving her in darkness. She'd probably moved fast to the door. The man who had taken her had hidden in the bushes by the yard. She was almost 100% sure. That was the most likely place. No chance he'd lurked there by accident. This had been planned.
I have the location.
Tatum's excited voice jolted her out of her reverie. He pointed at his phone emphatically. Foster was by his side in a second. Zoe hurried over to join them.
Where?
Foster asked, breathless.
Spillway Road,
Tatum said, indicating the map on the mobile screen.
It's an approximate location within 500 feet.
He switched to a satellite image. They waited for a few seconds as the phone's slow connection downloaded the image. Most of the area was covered with cacti, bushes and trees. Foster looked at the phone screen.
In that case, it could be Shalimar Road as well.
Not likely, Zoe interjected. Too close to the farm over here, she indicated the farm.
500 feet along Spillway Road here.
Foster traced the satellite image with his finger.
Can't be the northern part of the road. The foliage is too thick. He buried her in a clear patch of dirt. Has to be around here.
He pointed at a small area on the map about 50 feet in diameter.
I think you're right,
Tatum agreed.
I'll send a patrol over there right now. If she's there, we'll find her.
No, wait, Zoe blurted. You have to get crime scene technicians with you to process the area.
You're kidding.
Foster glanced at her, incredulous.
The girl might be suffocating in that box right now. There's not a moment to...
If she's in there, she's been dead for 3 days, Zoe said decisively. Rushing to get a corpse out will only hurt our effort to catch whoever did this later on. Foster glanced at the house as if worried Nicole's mother was listening in on their discussion.
You don't know that,
he hissed in a low voice. I do. Our analyst gave Medina a maximum of 36 hours.
That's just conjecture.
It's actually called math. Foster exhaled and shook his head.
I'm digging the girl up as soon as possible.
He marched away. Let's call the lieutenant, Zoe said urgently to Tatum. We need them to preserve the crime scene. Tatum glanced at her, scrunching his eyebrows.
This is not our case, he reminded her. We're just here to advise, and we definitely don't want to get on the detective's bad side.
But they might storm to that gravesite with patrol cars, a heavy machinery, and trample any shred of evidence we'll be able to use later.
It's not our decision to make.
Chapter 13. It was a 30-minute ride to Spillway Road, since Tatum made a wrong turn somewhere. By the time they arrived, it was easy to see that the police had found the exact location already. There were already 2 patrol cars there. Zoe groaned by his side when they saw them. 4 officers, hard at work, digging. 3 of them had spades. The other was digging with his hands, shoveling handfuls of earth out of the pit. Tatum swerved off the road, the car's tires scraping on the gravel. He opened the door and half-jogged toward the 4 officers. As he got closer, one of the officers turned to face him, probably about to tell him to stay away.
Agent Gray, FBI,
Tatum said, flashing his badge.
I'm just here to help.
The officer seemed confused for a second, then shrugged and returned to the growing hole. The men were digging fast, almost frantically, and Tatum felt their excitement. He reminded himself Zoe was probably right. If the girl was underneath all that sand, she was long gone. His only hope was she wasn't there at all, that the video had been fake, or that after burying her and pausing the video, the man had dug her up again. Why else pause the video? The only reason he could think of was that the man wanted to hide something. Before he could think it through, Tatum was in the pit alongside one of the officers, scooping earth with his hands. It was easy to dig. The earth wasn't compact, hadn't had time to harden in the few days since the man on the video had spilled it into the grave. As he tossed handful after handful of soil out of the pit, he tried to recall how deep the grave was. How much did they need to dig? It was about 3 or 4 feet, no more. The pace they were going, they could get there in 10 minutes. One of the men cried in pain and they all paused. A shovel had hit his hand as he scooped dirt.
Watch it, Ramirez!
The man snapped at the officer by his side.
Sorry,
Ramirez apologized, taking a step sideways.
Nearly took my finger off,
the hurt officer complained, but he was already shoveling sand again, ignoring the red streak of blood on his palm. After a few minutes, another car showed up. Tatum raised his eyes to see Detective Foster getting out of the car, holding a bunch of shovels. He hurried to the grave, gave a small pause as he saw Tatum in it, and then, with a curt nod, handed him a shovel. Just seconds later, one of the shovels hit wood, emitting a loud thunk.
I hit it!
Ramirez shouted.
It's here!
Tatum dug faster, feeling the buzz of frantic activity as the people beside him did the same. Soon he could see the wood, unpolished planks, pale and dirty. He found the shovel to be a burden since the thing kept bumping into the planks. He tossed the shovel out of the pit and began removing dirt with his hands again. All the other officers followed suit. Scoop, straighten, toss, crouch. Scoop, straighten, toss. Tatum suspected his back would hurt like hell later.
Okay,
Foster called.
That's good enough. Everyone out of the pit.
The box's lid was now mostly visible, covered by small mounds of sand in just a few spots. The only thing that prevented them from opening the thing were the 4 men currently standing on top of it. Tatum scrambled out and the rest of them followed. One of the officers, a tall, bald man with wide shoulders, bent into the pit, grabbing the edge of the box's lid. For a moment, it didn't budge, the weight of the sand on it keeping it shut. But the man grunted, and with a sudden creak, the lid came off. The smell that hit them told Tatum all he needed to know. As the people around him groaned, one of them running into the bushes to throw up, Tatum glanced into the coffin, looking at the discolored, bloated body. Nicole Medina had been in there after all, and she was long dead. Chapter 14. Zoe had been told repeatedly throughout her life that she was insensitive and tactless. Nevertheless, when Tatum turned to face her for the first time since they'd arrived at the gravesite, she knew it was a good time to bite her tongue. His suit, which was usually straight and immaculate, was now dusty and smudged, the fabric creased, one of the buttons of his white shirt open. His hair was ruffled, and his face was tired and sad. For a moment, she felt an urge to hug him. He walked over to her.
"She's been dead for 2 days at the very least."
Zoe gave him a short nod. A few yards away, Detective Foster took charge, telling the men to step away, to establish a perimeter around the crime scene. Because that was what it was now, of course, a murder crime scene. She approached the grave. Peering inside, she scrutinized the body. Medina was fully clothed in the outfit she'd presumably worn to the party. Zoe made a mental note to verify with her friends that it was indeed what she'd worn. Her shirt was disheveled but intact. Her eyes were shut. Perhaps she'd mercifully lost consciousness long before she'd completely run out of air. Her veins and arteries were discolored and dark, crisscrossing the pallid skin. A fly landed on her face, but it was the first one. No insects crawled around the body. Perhaps it had been buried too deep, or maybe the soil was too dry for insect life. A small device was embedded into the box just by the body's head. The camera. Zoe crouched to look at it more carefully. A bit of the wire snaked out of it, through a hole in the box. She examined the uneven side of the dug hole, seeing two sections where the wire had been partially uncovered. She wondered where the tip of the wire broke through the ground. She frowned, looking back at the box and the body. The box was a bit taller and significantly wider than the body was. Maybe these were standard measurements. She would have to check. But she had a hunch that the box was larger than it needed to be. Had the killer had Nicole in mind when he'd built the box, or had he built a box that would fit any random victim?
"Agent, do you mind signing this?"
Foster was by her side, handing her a clipboard and a pen. She glanced at it. It was a crime scene log. "Of course." She plucked the pen from his hand and scribbled her name under Tatum's. "I'm not an agent, Detective Foster. I'm a civilian consultant." Foster nodded distractedly, the distinction far from his mind. He peered down at the grave.
"What sort of monster would do something like that?"
"It's not a monster," Zoe said automatically. As Foster narrowed his eyes, she added, "It's a man you're dealing with, not a monster. He can be studied and understood. He can be caught."
"Do you think there'll be more? Is this a serial killer?"
She considered it. "I think it's best to talk once we have a thorough report on the crime scene." Foster looked up at the sky, the setting sun.
"That'll happen tomorrow. We'll do what we can in the darkness with spotlights. But I think we'll want to do another sweep in the morning."
His phone rang and he stepped away to answer the call. An officer, his uniform dusty from the digging, twisted crime scene tape around the low bushes that surrounded the grave. Zoe moved away, scanning the area around her. A wall of trees hid the gravesite from the road, their branches contorted and thorny, covered in nettles. Cacti growing between the trees supplied additional camouflage, their thick green arms creating an almost impenetrable wall. The road itself was a long, narrow stretch with almost no traffic, everything beige or gray or dusty green. It felt like a road to nowhere. The perfect place to bury a body. Or in this case, to bury a living victim. She turned around, looking back. There was an opening in the wall of cacti and trees about 6 feet wide. Two patrol cars were parked in it, one after the other. Zoe sighed. Obviously, this was the path the killer had used to get his own vehicle through. They'd probably eliminated any tire marks. She stepped to the narrow path and crouched, frowning.
What is it?
Tatum asked behind her. There were plants here as well. She pointed at a branch protruding from the ground. Someone clipped them.
You think it was the killer?
She stood up. Probably. See how the path leads directly to the gravesite? He'd prepared a driveway.
He had the gravesite planned in advance,
Tatum said. After a second, he added.
He probably dug the grave before he even kidnapped his victim.
But why here?
Zoe asked. We're in the middle of the desert. There are probably a million places to bury someone. Why choose a place where he had to work so hard just to get it ready? Tatum didn't answer, inspecting the clipped branch closely. Finally, he stood up and turned to her.
I just updated Mancuso. She wants to know if we think there'll be more victims.
It's too soon to say.
But you have a hunch, right? I know I do.
We can't act on a hunch. Tatum sighed.
What does your gut tell you, Zoe?
She bit her lip. There'll be more. This wasn't about killing Nicole Medina. This was about burying someone alive. This was a fantasy.
That's what I think as well, Tatum said. And if the killer called this experiment number one?
There's a good chance he's already planning experiment number two. Chapter 15. He was disappointed by the internet. Though he hadn't thought his video would be an instant viral success, he'd assumed watching a woman being buried alive would elicit a bit more than the paltry 1,903 views his video currently had. None of the 10 blogs and reporters he'd originally sent this to had published anything about it. The majority of his views came from a website that collected videos of people getting hurt and dying, and even there, his popularity was quite low. One of the users said it was lame that they didn't get to see the woman suffocate to death. Another commented this was clearly staged and that both participants were lousy actors. It didn't matter. The next one would get their attention. He switched to Instagram and began scrolling through his target's feeds. He almost never followed them in person anymore. Why risk getting caught when women went out of their way to do his dirty work for him? He took in the new selfies, the poses, the teasing captions. He made notes of the ones who had new boyfriends, and the ones who went out to party because they were free at last. Those were his preferable targets. Boyfriends made things more complicated. He paused for a moment over a profile of one Gloria King. Gloria had just tagged herself in a picture with friends on a night out. In the selfie, the three of them were holding bottles of beer, smiling at the camera. Gloria wore a sleeveless pink shirt, leaving her golden skin exposed. The picture was recent, uploaded only 20 minutes ago. A night out. Getting drunk. She would return home wasted, well beyond midnight, her parents long asleep. He knew where she lived, of course. They had a dog, but it was tied up near the front door, and the path up to her house was long and dark, the neighboring houses too far to matter. An opportunity there. He considered it. Gloria King's fate hung by a thread. It was too soon. He wasn't in a hurry. He had plenty of time. He minimized the browser and double-clicked the video thumbnail on the desktop. The face of the young woman appeared on screen, just as she slowly woke up. He could already sense the excitement building up inside him as she screamed her very first scream. He tried not to watch this video too many times. Anything could get dull with repetition, even this. But for now, it was still almost as exciting as being there for the very first time. He'd watched the entire video from start to finish only once. It was 14 hours long. It wasn't even the director's cut. It was just the raw material, and some of it wasn't great. The whole part between 7:08 and 11:32 was just her lying motionless with her eyes closed. And after 12:35:23, the woman stopped moving altogether, But all in all, it was definitely good material to work with. He estimated his personal edited version would be about 3 hours long. Right now, for a bit of release after a long day, he knew of several good segments he could watch. He could start with 3:42. As Nicole Medina thumped the lid, starting to scream again, he grabbed the box of tissues on the desk, breathing hard. Chapter 16. Harry Berry sat by his desk, staring into space. The incessant noise of the Chicago Daily Gazette office served as a background music for his thoughts, something he almost didn't notice anymore. The sound of a printer spewing pages, the endless tapping of his co-workers' keyboards, the daily loud phone conversations between Rhonda and her husband. It hadn't changed for the past 6 years. 6 years of sameness. 6 years of writing what his editor liked to call human interest stories, and Harry called addictive trash. Celebrity news and sex scandals. Sometimes he mixed it up with some celebrity scandals and sex news. He used to like it. He was good at it. But he'd gotten a taste of something different, and now his everyday life adopted a bland flavor, like someone who ate meatloaf every day and liked it, but then had a one-time encounter with a juicy steak. He pondered this as he recalled the short conversation he'd had on the phone just an hour earlier. He'd received a tip, the tantalizing hint of a good story, one that he'd been working on for over a month now. And the next chapter of this story was not in Chicago, where he worked. It was in San Angelo. The problem was, how to get there. The idea of taking a vacation and paying for the trip himself sat uncomfortably with him. No, much better for his boss to pay for the trip and for Harry's expenses, and infinitely better if he didn't spend his precious vacation days but instead got paid for his time. How to convince his editor? That was the issue he mulled over in his head. He couldn't see any way to solve that conundrum. It made him quite upset. He browsed to his latest online article, where he doubted a famous local college football halfback's affair with a cheerleader. The title of the article, "Give Me an F-L-I-N-G," made him quite proud. It was a short article, written in a somewhat bemused manner, like all his human interest stories were. He'd signed it, as always, as H. Berry, because Harry Berry wasn't an acceptable name for a reporter. In fact, it wasn't an acceptable name for anything. It was an indication of parental laziness, as if his mother had said, "Let's not think of a whole name, let's just figure out one letter to switch." Now, as he often did when he needed a fun distraction, he scrolled down to the comments. He enjoyed the miasma of trolls, angry readers, and loneliness that accompanied the comments in general. But what he loved most were the outraged readers. Nothing was as satisfying as a reader who read the article from beginning to end in fascination and then hurried to comment about everyone's obsession with sex or violence and moan about the decline of American values. One comment in particular, posted by Concerned Citizen 13, caught his eye. "Trash! The writer of this article should be ashamed of himself." It drew his attention first and foremost, because it was the only comment with no spelling mistakes and with actual punctuation. But more to the point, because of the sentiment that he should be ashamed of himself. He stared at it long and hard, a grin forming on his face. Shame. Now there was a thing. He checked the time. He should have sent the draft of his next article to his editor 10 minutes ago, which meant he would appear just about...
"Harry, where's the draft?"
Daniel McGrath stepped into his cubicle. Harry didn't answer, staring at the screen, his gaze far away.
"Harry! Hey!"
Harry blinked, glancing back at his longtime editor.
"Oh, Daniel. I didn't hear you. Where's the damn article? You told me you had something good planned for today. The nude paparazzi pictures of that Russell woman?" "Paparazzi. Right."
Harry let out a long sigh.
"Well, where is it?" "Daniel, did you ever stop to consider what we're doing?"
The editor blinked in surprise.
"Is this about not hiring our own paparazzi photographers again? I told you it's way cheaper to..." "No. I mean..."
Harry gestured sadly at the screen.
"Everything. The paper? Those articles I write. Those people. I was sitting here writing that article, and I suddenly thought, Casey Russell has parents. She... Well, what difference does that? She has a mother and a father. That's how parents usually work, yes. Can you imagine opening the newspaper on Sunday morning, and your daughter's bare chest is on the front page? Don't flatter yourself, it's on page 8, Harry. How it must feel. The same girl you bounced on your knees. And we pixelate those breasts, you know that. The girl you told bedtime stories to. What are you talking about? How it wrenches his heart. His daughter exploited that way. Exploited? Didn't you tell me she was the one who called the paparazzi photographers in the first place? Didn't you ever make mistakes when you were young? We were like hyenas, waiting for her to fall. So what if she called them? She's still young. She's 26. She's 26.
Harry shook his head, shutting his eyes.
26.
Daniel nudged closer, lowering his voice.
Harry, what's going on? We don't make the world a better place. A better place? What are you saying? We provide entertainment. We make people happy. We need to hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Harry began to enjoy himself.
It's my fault. I got addicted to the attention. But now that we have a strong platform, we can use it. I write human interest stories, right? Let's make them count. Make them count. You remember that email? The nurse who took care of that homeless person with the cancer. Let's write a piece on her.
Are you trying to avoid writing this article? I can give it to someone else. I have a dozen junior writers dying to write the Russell woman's boobs article.
Casey. Russell. She has a name. She's a human being, Daniel. A human being with feelings.
That was an actual quote from a comment on one of his articles.
She's a human being whose husband embezzled millions and now bared her boobs to get some attention. I want to write about that teacher who tutors illegal immigrants in English. People don't want to read that. They should. I don't want to be ashamed of what I do.
He considered thumping his chest and decided it would be going too far.
I'm going to write good human interest stories. No more exploitation.
Daniel's eyes shifted. Anxiety flickered in them. Harry was the paper's most popular journalist by far. Not just because of his topic material, but because he knew how to use it. The worst thing that could happen was for him to be ashamed.
Listen, I see you're going through a phase here, Harry. Tell you what, you need a vacation. No, I want to write stories.
He shifted the papers on his tables.
I had something here. A vet who adopted a three-legged dog. You'll really like it. Tell you what,
Daniel blurted.
How about a follow-up with that profiler, Bentley? You've been nagging me with it for a while. Bentley?
Harry quirked his eyebrows.
The FBI profiler from last month. You were interested in writing about her at the time. Write about crime and serial killers. I don't know, Daniel. Try it. You can make it a positive article. A young profiler trying to make a difference. It's a nice story, right? I don't think she's available for an interview. She just went to San Angelo following a case. Well, fantastic!
Daniel brightened. Fly there. See what she does.
Write about that. That's not exploitation, right? And maybe the change of scenery will do you some good. Get you to see things in a better light.
Harry sighed heavily again, his shoulders slumping. While in his mind, he was doing a victory lap, the crowd cheering wildly. Chapter 17. Zoe lay on the motel bed, her hair still wet from the shower, wearing a pair of underwear and a long, baggy shirt that had the logo of an indie rock band Zoe didn't know. The shirt belonged to Andrea, and Zoe was pretty sure that she'd actually taken it from one of her boyfriends back in Boston. But it was comfortable, and comfort was what Zoe needed right now. They'd left soon after the crime scene technicians had shown up on the scene. Zoe had offered to drive, Tatum seeming tired and unfocused. He'd insisted he should drive, and she hadn't argued. He'd taken them to a motel that was reasonably close to the police station. They'd both been silent during the car ride. Once she'd closed the motel room's door behind her, the images and sensations had begun to break through. They were leaning against the wall of detachment that she protected herself with. As soon as she was alone, that wall always became paper thin. She could walk out of the room, search for distractions. But she knew from experience it would only result in horrific nightmares. Her mind needed to vent, and it would do it one way or another. Best do it now when she was mentally prepared. The body had triggered this. Before she'd seen it, there could be numerous theories about what had happened. But once they'd found the body, got a visceral glimpse of its state, those realities had merged into one. Nicole Medina had been kidnapped, placed in a box, and buried alive. Zoe had a knack. She could crawl into the mind of a killer, think like he did, sometimes even guess what he'd do next. But it was a gift with a price. She'd often find herself trapped in the mind of the victim as well. See their last moments, feel them almost as if they were her own. And in Nicole's case, her imagination didn't even need to try hard. For the first time, she'd actually seen the victim suffering. Sliding into Nicole Medina's mind at that nightmarish juncture was as natural as breathing. It would have been dark in that box, pitch black. She'd been lying on her back, and whenever she moved, she'd feel the walls around her. The air would feel stale, dusty, and as time went by, she'd have trouble breathing, which would trigger panic. The walls closed around her, the horrifying knowledge that she was trapped with nowhere to go. As a child, Zoe had once gone on a tour with her family to Laurel Caverns. It was a large group of people, and Zoe had been excited, waving her flashlight around. Then, mid-tour, as she crawled through a tight tunnel, the woman in front of her got stuck. Behind her, the rest of the group kept closing in, not realizing the way forward was blocked, and Zoe could feel the weight of their bodies approaching. Walls all around her, people blocking her way forward and back. She suddenly had trouble breathing. Andrea, who was right behind, pushed her to get her to move, and it had taken all of Zoe's self-control not to kick back. She always avoided caves and tunnels after that day, and small elevators made her uncomfortable. She lay on the bed, imagining the sensation of being trapped in that tiny space, a mountain of dirt all around her, her heart pounding in her ears, her breath coming out in short, panicky bursts. Chapter 18. Tatum stood in the shower, his back aching, palms burning from a dozen bruises and scratches. One of his fingernails was broken, a thin line of blood underneath. He let the hot water wash over him, thinking of Nicole Medina lying in the box, remembering the girl's screams on the video. He observed the water pooling around his feet, gray with dirt. Sighing, he opened the motel's customary soap bars package and began scrubbing. Once he was clean, he got out of the bathroom, toweling himself, leaving wet footprints behind him on the parquet floor. He shut the blinds, then let the towel drop, considering his very limited wardrobe. It was almost evening, but murder scenes weren't generally conducive to a healthy appetite, and he wasn't prepared to consider dinner. He thought of watching a bit of TV, but the idea of being cooped in the small room wasn't attractive either. The motel had a swimming pool, and Tatum decided a short swim would be perfect, both for his back and his appetite. He hadn't packed his bathing suit, so he went through his shorts. The white boxer shorts were a big no-no for obvious reasons. The black ones were a bit too tight, and while it wouldn't be a problem as long as he stayed in the pool, once he left it, they'd cling to his privates like plastic sandwich wrap. The blue ones were probably fine. He put them on, threw a towel over his shoulder and left the room, locking it behind him. He ignored the panicky voice in his mind, telling him he was outside in nothing but his underpants. He wasn't. He was wearing a bathing suit. The swimming pool wasn't large by any standard, and the water sparkled in the setting sun's light. The surface was still, begging for someone to dive in. Tatum dove headfirst, which almost resulted in a concussion, since the bottom was much closer than he'd initially estimated. He swam underwater to the other side of the pool and resurfaced, taking a long breath. He did some laps. They were ridiculously short, a bit like doing laps in the bathtub. But for a while he concentrated on nothing but his body's movement in the water. On his breath, on pushing himself away whenever he reached the pool's edge. After a few dozen mini-laps, he felt someone watching him. He paused and lifted his head. It was Zoe. She stared at him with her piercing eyes, like a bird of prey considering a fish for dinner. He gave her a cheery wave.
Come for a swim?
She wrinkled her nose. I don't like swimming.
The water is really nice and cool.
Despite the fact that the sky was already a dark blue, the air was still stifling hot.
You can dip your feet.
To his surprise, she actually sat down by the pool's edge and took off her shoes. She put one foot in the water and then the other. Then she let out a long sigh. He swam to her side. Her face seemed far away and troubled. For a second, he almost splashed her with water, recalling from his college days that it was a sure way to get a shrieking laugh from a girl, a playful stop it. But then, looking at her face, he thought better of it. Zoe didn't seem like the type to let out a shrieking laugh. She'd probably just give him a withering, chilly stare, or possibly kill him.
You okay?
Yeah. She let out a small shiver. I just needed to get out a bit. I've been thinking about Nicole Medina. Tatum nodded. After a few seconds, he asked.
Why don't you like swimming?
She eyed him speculatively. Didn't you see The Wizard of Oz? Water makes me melt. Tatum grinned at her and she smiled back. I just don't like swimming, she said. I don't like cold water, and my hair gets all tangly after I swim. The chlorine in swimming pools makes my skin itch.
Gotcha. Swimming's the worst.
Andrea was on a high school swimming team, Zoe added. She'd spend every day in the pool if you'd let her. She fumbled in her pocket, retrieving her phone. Her lips pursed as she tapped at its screen. Then she put it aside and gazed at the water.
How's Andrea doing?
Tatum asked, guessing that that was what Zoe had checked. I wouldn't know. Her tone was testy. She isn't responding to my text.
Did she see it yet?
Well, no. But I've seen her ignore texts all the time. She doesn't open the ones that she ignores. She's sneaky like that.
I'm sure she's fine.
Tatum knew fully well it was an empty gesture. He'd been present during the discussions about Rod Glover's last letter to Zoe, his picture with Andrea. But since that day, no one had seen or heard anything from Glover. If Zoe heard his words, she didn't give any indication of it. She checked the screen again.
Andrea is a smart girl, Tatum said. She wouldn't.
Andrea doesn't know what people like Glover are capable of. If she did, she would never leave the apartment. But I know. And you do too. They construct elaborate fantasies and obsess about them, making them more intricate, more alive, until the urge is impossible to resist. And then they act.
Yeah, but Rod Glover never trailed a specific girl. You told me that. He always acted on opportunity, targeting girls who were alone. He didn't stalk anyone.
He stalked me, Zoe pointed out. A month before, during the strangling Undertaker case in Chicago, Glover had followed Zoe until she was alone, and then he pounced. Luckily, she'd managed to fight him off. Tatum knew that in Zoe's position, he wouldn't be able to calm down. To be aware that it was possible one of the people they routinely profiled could be targeting your family. It was a sickening feeling. Like an oncologist finding symptoms of a brain tumor in his child, knowing what those symptoms could potentially mean. Ignorance sometimes really was bliss. He looked up at Zoe, noticing her rapid blinking, the tremor in her lip. Sitting at the pool's edge, her feet in the water, she suddenly seemed like a lost girl looking for her parents.
There's an internal investigation on one of my cases, he blurted,
searching for a distraction, any distraction. It worked. Zoe focused her stare on him, her eyes widening. What case?
Wrongful shooting of a suspected pedophile.
Oh.